Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Good evening and welcome to
The Men About It
on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Rachel Jacobs.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermenting.
Found everywhere great podcasts are found, especially right here on heritageradionetwork.org.
We're in the back of Fifth Hammer Brewing Company, the brewery that Chris and I own with our partner Dave. Anyway, and we are sitting at a table in front of a whole bunch of amazing looking and smelling cheese, as well as six Fifth Hammer beers. So we're doing a special beer and cheese pairing show with Alexa Wilkinson. Hey.
Hi, how's it going?
So tell us what you do now that's related to cheese.
So right now I work at Murray's Cheese in the wholesale department. Basically what that means is I work with chefs all over the city, all over the country even, and I help develop their cheese menus, their cheese programs, even talk about their cooking cheeses. I help bring consistency and seasonality to their menu, and it's really fun to do that every single day.
Oh, no. All right, well, before we get started tasting these cheeses, can you tell us a little bit about your background, about how you got into cheese?
So that's a long story, but you know, we have time. We got beer and cheese, we got time. When I moved to New York, I was a starving artist and I was touring and playing music and I needed a job. And my friend Ann Becerra, who actually was roommates with the friend I worked with, got me a job at the Ginger Man because she told me how to like fill out the application correctly. I didn't know who Michael Jackson was in terms of the beer world. I didn't even know the difference between ale and a lager. I had to research all that for my second interview. When I started working at the Ginger Man, I just kind of fell in love with the food service industry. I loved that every night felt like a show. It felt like I was making someone's night by giving them a really good beer and a really good like cheese platter. I just really enjoyed it. So I became a chef. And after that, I worked all around the city for a lot of craft beer centric restaurants. I was a food director for one. I really, really enjoyed it, but the chef life is really hard and, you know, I didn't want to spend all my time in a kitchen. So I decided, hey, why not go for another fermented thing I really love, which is cheese. So I saw Murray's was hiring. I took a shot in the dark. It took 3 months to hire me. And then I finally got the job. I think because I said I love a poisse in my interview, which is like a stinky French cheese. It's super oozy. But that is my cry in the walk-in cheese. So that's how I started to work at Murray's. And through the course of working, I just fell in love with everything. I've learned so much. I love teaching classes. I love talking about this. And I especially love, down to my roots, pairing cheese with beer.
That's pretty awesome. Should we start this pairing then?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's start with the first cheese that you're about to give us to pair. So tell us a little bit about the cheese, why you chose to bring it today, and then we'll talk a little bit about what we're pairing it with.
Cool. So I'm actually going to start off with, it's called Latour. It's an Italian cheese from Piedmont. So this cheese is actually a Robiola style. If you notice, I know for the people at home, you can't see the cheese, but it's a very wrinkly white rind and a smidge of it is oozing out. It's really creamy, super oozy. And if you were to smell it, you would smell really like creamy lactic notes. Doesn't have a lot of smell to it because it's a pretty fresh cheese. But you want to start off when you're doing any sort of pairing going from mild to wild. So we don't want to blow out your palate with a blue cheese right off the bat, even though it might be really good with some other fruit beer or lighter beer. I want to start you off with Robiola because it pairs really well with anything that's like cava-esque or champagne-like, all the way down to like sour jammy beers. So I wanted to start off with this particular cheese because it just goes so well. It's actually a mixed milk cheese. It's sheep, goat, and cow, meaning that it's going to have a lot of fat, a lot of decadent buttery notes. It's going to be really rich. It's going to go very well as a dessert and or savory cheese. This is actually a cheese that you could probably just stick a candle in and eat it as like a cake replacement. We call the cheesecake of cheese. So I wanted to start this off so we can like get off on a really cool, like high-end bougie note when it comes to our pairings today.
You called it a particular style of cheese. What is that?
So there's a bunch of different styles when it comes to fresher cheeses. A Robbiola style is a particular Italian style. It's going to be oozy very quickly and age and ripen very quickly.
How quickly is quickly? And what is the average for ripening of a cheese?
For this particular cheese, it's about 5 weeks, I would say. It's going to spend 2 weeks out of its life drying at first, and then it's going to start to, the mold will start to take over the surface. It'll get all wrinkly like that. That's actually Geotrichum, which is a particular mold spore, which acts like yeast, actually. And it breaks down the proteins in the cheese a lot quicker. What's actually happening when cheese breaks down is lactose, which is milk sugar, which brewers use constantly because it makes beer creamy and frothy and have a nice mouthfeel to it. It's actually being converted into lactic acid, so it's a controlled spoilage of cheese. So it takes about 5 weeks for this to break down and become oozy like that. But the inner paste is going to be a little bit chalkier and a little bit harder.
What are some other cheeses? So we're just talking about in general pairing. What are some? This is pretty widely available, though, right? Would you say?
Yeah, I would say like at Whole Foods or any other high-end cheese purveyor. Probably not at your local grocery store unless you're really lucky. But yeah, this is pretty widely available. You can probably get it online anywhere. You can actually buy it on Amazon, I think.
And then what would the other cheeses that would be similar to this be like in the? You know, if people are looking, because I think actually this would be a great. This would be a very cool cheese menu to do for a beer and cheese pairing or even a party. So what would be another cheese that would maybe be similar if people were looking to pair with what we're about to pair this with?
So that's a good question. Anything that's going to be like a cave-aged goat cheese might be very similar. It's not going to be, they're going to be a little more goaty, a little more like animal-y tasting, but like Cremant, Seltzer Share, things like that. Vermont Creamery does a lot of really beautiful French cave-aged goat cheeses and styles, which are very similar to ones like from the Loire Valley. So if you wanted to get something that was similar, that would be it. But there aren't a lot of places. This is specifically an Italian cheese. Maybe like Robbiola Bocina, Kunik, which is actually local. It's from Nettle Meadow. I can't say that. It's a double L thing. I sound like a child when I'm saying it. But anything that's going to be like a triple cream, something as oozy, really rich and decadent, anything like that would be very similar.
Chris and Mary, what are we pairing this with? What's this Fifth Hammer beer?
This Fifth Hammer beer is a kettle sour, and it's called Poglodyte. We added passion fruit, blood orange, and guava to basically a Berliner Weiss quick sour, 50% pills, 50% wheat, actually some oats, 50% a combination of wheat and oats. And we added the passion fruit, blood orange, and mango, or blood orange and guava after fermentation. So it still has a lot of the sweetness left, but it dances with the acid.
Nice.
Yeah, it looks like ice cream.
It's like the cheesecake of ice.
Oh my god, it's so soft.
This in particular is a pretty fruit forward kettle sour, I would say. But I think this would work really well even with a drier, like almost any kind of kettle sour.
Because
it has that clean clean lactic character of the sour. Just works really well. So
yeah. Well, I would say that if you have any super fatty cheese, anything with a high acid content to it, or anything with bubbles will help cut that down. So this is a perfect combination of a great, great beer to pair with this cheese. I would say another. One of my favorite intro sours is like Peekskill Simple Sour, because it's very peachy, very apricot. It's very easy and drinkable. There's even like nice like feta watermelon notes to it. I don't know why I always get that like taste evoked out of that. But any like intro sour beer would be really good. I don't think anything too like upfront and like crazy acidic would go very well, because if you're getting into like lambic territory, it can either be like super fruit forward and it just drowns out the cheese, or it's like so acidic that you're just losing everything else.
Like, this makes me think like the Dogfish Head what's it called? Sequench?
Sequench, yeah.
Yeah, like that would probably go really well. That's available pretty widely. But if you go to a lot of breweries are doing kettle sours. They might be calling them straight up kettle sours. They might be calling them Berliner Weiss, even a Gosa maybe that wasn't too salt forward.
Yeah, like a classic Leipziger Gosa would be very good with this. And having also that little bit of salt in it as well. Like this cheese is salty, but it's not as salty as some of the other ones we're going to taste. So having that addition of salt might actually bring out more sweetness in the cheese.
Yeah. And I just had the Avery Gosa with the bitter melon, actually, I had at a bar not too long ago, and that would be excellent with this. So just thinking of, you know, beers, if you would like to set up a beer and cheese pairing at home, you know, you probably have a local craft brewery near you that's making a kettle sour, but otherwise there's a lot more that are commercially available, or maybe not a straight kettle sour, but something that's very similar.
Do you think jammy too?
Yeah. All right, so next cheese.
Next cheese. Okay, so we're going to go for the Murray's Double Cream Brie. This is a French brie. Kind of the similar way that we talk about like doubles and triples in beer. Obviously, historically speaking, that was because they didn't know how to take ABV. They just knew it was like double as strong as the last beer that they made. I think the double...
I have contention with that. So there's a lot of different thoughts on that for the old Belgian styles. It's not always necessarily double as strong. Some people think that actually that came from the single, the double, the triple, the quadruple came from the way the monks used to keep track of their kegs and the beer that they did. They would put one slash for the singles, they'd put two slash for the doubles, they'd put three slashes for the things so they could differentiate the kegs.
But nobody really knows.
Nobody really knows.
But
we do
magic.
Know that it's not exactly double as strong, and we know that it's not triple as strong and quadruple as strong.
But that's what I tell people in my beer classes.
Okay, good. So.
Well, the thing is, it could be because if they were making like a table beer, right, then the double might have been twice as strong. And then they were like, oh, well, now we're making this new style of beer, and we call that one a double. So let's just call this one a triple, because why not?
I mean, anyway, maybe.
Maybe.
We don't know, Chris. Yes. We'll never know.
I think Bigfoot did it.
Cool. Well, back to cheese.
That wasn't cheesy enough.
Back to cheesy things. So this is a double cream brie, and what double implies is that there's a particular amount of fat matter that has to be in this cheese for it to be called a double. The same thing with the triple cream. So the percentage-wise, I'm not super clear, but there is I think it's like 65% fat matter. And when I say fat, I mean of the solids that are in the cheese, 65% of that has to be fat solids. So this is going to be like buttery and mushroomy, like a very classic brie. But it's also going to be like really yeasty tasting, kind of like cauliflower, roasted cauliflower, vegetal, mushroom, but like with a hint of sourdough baguette, which I really love about it.
Yeah, what do you pair with this usually?
So this one, you would probably pair with something on the more mellow side. A Pilsner would be really nice because you want to get some of those more nuanced malt notes, maybe some sweetness. Anything too alcoholic, anything too hoppy is just going to kind of overpower this cheese. This is really mellow, good starter cheese, good like if you're having an intro to cheese party at your house, this is a really good one. It's very like party friendly.
Yeah.
And if it stays out at room temperature for a while, it can get a little bit on the oozy side. This one maintains its shape a little bit better, so it can be out on like a catering platter, out at home if you're having like a Thanksgiving or Christmas party, something like that.
And brie is more common. I know that the quality can vary, I'm sure, depending, but it is a more common cheese to find at your local grocery store, depending where you are.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just one of those cheeses that it's not super hard to make. It's another cheese that because the aging is not as long, it's only about a month, or maybe even 2 months, depending on the style, that the cheesemaker can turn that cheese out pretty quickly, and it's like a moneymaker. It's like
the flagship.
Yeah, you want to turn that out very quickly.
So they can be, you know, bolder in flavor, less bold in flavor. What are you looking for in a quality brie? I mean, I feel like they vary widely by way of.
Well, a good indication of a quality brie has rack marks on it. So this one has been patted down very nicely. It has a nice, even, thick rind. But if you look at it, you can see hints of where it's been flipped. So that indicates that the cheesemaker spent time with the art of affinage, which is the art of cheesemaking, the art of cave aging cheeses, to take the time to pat the mold down, flip it, inspect it, really take care of it. A lot of commercial brie and like camemberts are sprayed with mold on the outside so that they develop much quicker and that they can turn them around even quicker. Those won't really have a lot of rack marks on them, but on this one you can see that. We actually get this from a purveyor, a cheesemaker that has been making this for a very, very long time. And we specifically chose this cheese because of its quality, because of its, you know, its flavor profile. We know that it's a very friendly cheese for everybody to eat. So that's why we...
So while you guys have been talking, I've been tasting. And I have to say, this is a really good pairing. So Chris and I have done beer and cheese pairings in the past. But I don't think we've ever paired a brie with a pilsner. I always feel like, because you're right, even though brie is super approachable, it still is, I don't know, I've always kind of...
Assertive.
Yeah, assertive, but man, it works really well with the pilsner. So we're drinking this with our Neighbor Brow Pils, which is kind of the one beer that we always have on at Fifth Hammer. But pilsners now are pretty widely available, and a lot more small craft breweries are making them as well. Pilsners are a little more challenging because they are a lager. They take longer, so you have to lager them.
I seem to be one of the only ones here eating the rind. Is it bad if you eat the mold on a brie? Because I always do.
No. So all rinds are edible. Not all are palatable. I know what this rind tastes like. I don't need to eat it. Anyone listening that works with me, I'm very sorry that I'm saying this again out loud. I don't particularly like eating rinds. I'm just not a fan of it. But I always encourage people to nibble on a rind because when cheese ripens, it's typically surface ripening, which means it ripens obviously from the outside in. And on the surface, you're going to get different flavors because it's concentrated and it's just going to be a lot more like mushroomy and earthy. And then when you get more towards the paste, it's going to be a little more buttery and decadent. And you're going to get all these mushroom notes because a byproduct of cheese aging, especially with this particular mold style, is that like mushroom alcohol. And that's where you get like those cauliflower, like roasted vegetable notes from it. And they're really gorgeous to try. And having a spectrum of flavors is wonderful. And that's what makes cheese so great. I just don't like rinds that much.
I'm a proud rind nibbler.
Good. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. It's very contentious with some people, though, right? I've read some articles about rind versus no rind. Yeah.
I think I once went to a pairing. I believe it was also Murray's cheese, where the rind was literally hay. And everyone in the room was like, are we supposed to eat this? But like it added more depth to it if you did.
Yeah. Certainly. I'd say always nibble on a rind. You don't have to eat the whole rind. It's okay if you don't eat it. It's your party. In your mouth.
Anyway, more breweries are making pilsners or nice lagers that are very smooth. What else would you typically pair a brie with?
Very light flavored, lighter bodied.
Maybe like a blonde ale?
Blonde ale would be nice. A wheat ale would be really nice. We already talked about Leipziger Goza, but I think it would still go well with this. Nothing too sour, nothing too hoppy. This is kind of one you want to do like with. I even think like a malty or amber ale might be very nice with it. Might bring out even more of like the yeasty buttery notes. Just anything, like what would you have for breakfast? What beer would you have for breakfast? Should I ask Chris this question ever?
Well, the only reason I'm eating breakfast is I'm still awake. Wait. Hey. That's a lie. Actually, I love breakfast all the time today. I think Belgian Wits and Hefeweizens are great at breakfast time, and I think those are like really great things, and they do go great with brie, that brie as well for sure. That soft action. I like wheat beers with eggs. One of my favorite pairings ever, and kind of one of the things that really got my first wow moment with pairing food with beer, was when Garrett Oliver made a grilled green apple and brie omelet and paired it with the Brooklyn Blanche. Mm. And that was my first, like, wow. So that was a wheat beer made with, like, brie and eggs. No, the beer wasn't made with brie and eggs, but paired with the brie and eggs, and it was just awesome.
Wait, it was an omelet with...
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was like,
in the green apple, the tanginess kind of really...
brie and green apple would be awesome.
Tangy.
You might be onto something with eggs in your beer. It's a clarifier. I mean, you could do like a consommé ale.
There we go.
I mean,
there we
go. Eggs are excellent in cocktails.
Mary and I did drink a beer with a quail egg in it.
Yeah.
I think we're on.
Who made that? That was Brooklyn Brew Shop.
With the Brew Dog guys.
Yeah, with the Brew Dog.
Television show, yeah. That was kind of a surreal moment because we're on like this roof. A roof. We're in a roof of an apartment building in downtown Brooklyn. They're filming us for one of the Brew Dog episodes. And we're drinking this beer that had like
a quail egg. It was
anyway, I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Let's get some cheese in the mix on that one. Yeah. Be a wacky little meal. Cool. Next cheese. It's actually one of my favorite cheeses of all time. So this is sheep rustler
slices.
This is a rind I would eat. This is a rind I will eat. So this is a beautiful sheep's milk cheese. It's a raw sheep's milk cheese. It's from Somerset, England, from White Lake Dairy. The rind on this is gorgeous. For those who cannot see it, it's got these beautiful yellow and white mold spots. On occasion, it will have these gorgeous orange hues as well. Those are really delicious molds. If you see those, you're going to probably get some, like, nutty sweet notes, like almost like lightly salted pistachios or cashews. And this cheese is fantastic, really buttery. I would pair this maybe with, like, a session ale, something that has a little bit of a hop to it, maybe a little bit of a funk as well. This is definitely one of those cheeses that I would snack on every day. This is my Saturday cheese. It's something we like to say in the cheese world, like, what's your Saturday cheese? Like, if no one is around looking at you and you don't have to be, like, pretentious and have a meeting with a big chef or, like, a huge restaurant group and, like, what are you going to eat at home? For me, it's this. I know this is a little bit on the expensive side, but this is so snackable. This goes well with pretty much everything. But I really love this with, like, funkier beers, saisons, session ales that have a little more of a malt characteristic to them. Anything that's going to go well with, like, barnyardy flavors, but, like, more on the buttery, minerally side of life. So you guys want to...
What's your go-to pretentious cheese?
Oh, good pretentious cheese. I think, like, Comté is, like, what we would all like to be our weekend cheese, because Comté is amazing. It's sweet. It's not super, like, powerful, and you can snack on it all day long. It's really good for melting. You can use it for many different things. It makes a really expensive grilled cheese. But, like, just to say Comté is, you know, it just sounds a little on the bougie side. But Comté is an Alpine French cheese, so it's going to be, like, nutty and sweet. It's typically aged for about a year. They're huge, huge, giant wheels, but it's delicious. It's just not as salty as the other cheeses.
So this beer is called Savvy Sea Mare. Mary made this beer.
It's a slightly hoppy session ale, but it has a malt backbone to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a decent amount of oats in this, actually. Oats and Pilsner and Two Row. What were the hops on this one? I forget right now.
There was citrus coming through with the beer.
It was Laurel and Cascade,
oh, yeah.
Wasn't it?
Laurel, yeah.
Yeah. And session ales are pretty popular right now. I feel like they're starting to have a moment.
I think so. I think they had a moment a while ago, but then they weren't really sessions. You know? We were like, oh, here's a 7% session ale. And you're like, that doesn't make sense. But I appreciate the ones that are.
And then what would other cheeses, like, be similar to this that might be more accessible?
So a lot of sheep's milk cheeses will come from, like, England and or France, just because they've been making cheese for so long. Also, Aradi and, like, Pyrenees Brebis are going to be really good sheep's milk cheeses, aged sheep's milk cheeses. This is a younger sheep's milk cheese. But, like, Pyrenees Brebis would be a pretty accessible cheese to find. It's not that hard, especially, like, maybe, like, more of a farmstead grocery store, like Whole Foods, Adams, stuff like that.
And with that, we're going to take a short break. But mad about it.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
All right, welcome back to Foment About It. So we're here in the back of Fifth Hammer, pre-recording an episode with Alexa Wilkinson of Murray's Cheese, and we're talking about the world of beer and cheese pairing, and she's giving specific recommendations and a lot of really useful knowledge about cheese.
I'm trying. Doing my best.
So what's our next cheese?
So we're actually going to go with Project X. I really love this cheese. We actually we age this in our own caves, so this is a Murray's cave-aged cheese that is washed with Finger Lakes Gewürztraminer and fennel pollen. So it's going to be nice and herbal.
What was that word?
Gewürztraminer.
It's a wine.
It's a wine.
A wine.
Yeah.
A white wine.
It is a German-style white wine.
Oh, my God.
But so the way that we... it's harder to do this with, like, softer, oozier cheeses, but when we talk about tasting cheese, we like to kind of reference, like, wine tasting almost, because when you cut the cheese and it sits out for a little bit, it's actually going to dry out and the surface of the cheese is not going to give as much aroma. So for this one, if you guys want to, like, bend it and break it open a little bit and give it a little smell on the inside, we're going to do the proper taste. Got a really beautiful, like, almost like brown butter quality to it, going with a really wonderful, like, just middle of the road, like, really friendly IPA would be really good with this. Something with maybe like an East Coast hop. I don't know if you guys are using that.
So we have something. I brought our Brute IPA.
Cool. Let's try that. What hop profile is in this? What hop varietal?
It's dry hopped with Mandarina Bavaria, which is...
That's not middle of the road.
Not middle of the road. No, there's fruitier. It's like hopped like a New England IPA.
Okay.
But it's crisp and clean and a high carbonation level, which is why we call it a Brute IPA.
I think this will work.
Thin body, so it'll cut through the fatness of the cheese.
But I feel, I feel like it's got a little bit of like fruity sweetness that I thought would pair nicely with cheese.
Ooh, this works really well. I like it. I like it because it's bringing out the fennel. And I really, really love that about this cheese. And if you eat the rind, you're going to get more of it. But I feel like it's so nuanced. But when you pair it with the right beverage, you can really get those fennel notes, which I think are really what makes this cheese so special.
Now, where are Murray's Cheese Caves located?
In Long Island City, actually.
Oh, wow.
We are your neighbors.
Oh, wow. God.
And what's cool about what we're doing is experimenting a lot. We get green wheels, which means like fresh, unaged wheels from other creameries. And we're kind of putting our own spin on it. We named it Project X because we just couldn't come up with a name for it. And when we first started and Project X just stuck. But yeah, we get this from Springbrook, which is actually pretty local. It's up in Vermont. Anything that's, any cheese that's on the East Coast is considered local. Just because creameries are not easy to like have in the city. I can't, you know, even New Jersey is local. Pennsylvania is local. Vermont, we call local. But this is a really good collaboration with Springbrook Farm, and we get this real green, and then we apply our own wash to it. They don't wash it too often because, as you can see, it's not like a wet, sticky cheese like that one, the Willoughby is, that we're going to try in a little bit. It's only washed to kind of keep it moist and to keep it from cracking, but it does apply a little bit of yeast to it, so you're going to get more like sourdough, bready, brioche notes with this particular cheese. But I'm just really excited about this because it's gone through a lot of different changes. It didn't work in certain rooms. It was in a wash drying room for a while, got a little too funky, aged too quickly. PJ, our cave master, puts it in the Alpine room, which is a gorgeous like cheese sauna is what I like to call it. And it sits there in like a little bit lower humidity, a little bit lower temperature, ages really nicely on these like beautiful spruce racks for a very long time. Just a really gorgeous cheese.
And what are cheeses that are similar to this that we might be able to find? Although, is there nothing like it?
I would say no, there's nothing else like it. No, there's some younger, like semi-firm cow's milk cheeses. I would actually say if you ever have a chance to try Winecast Lagrean, just with the paste and like the texture and that kind of full-bodied, like buttery mouthfeel on it, that would be very similar. But Winecast is going to be very like salami-y. It's also washed in wine, but it's actually soaked in Lagrean wine with like garlic and peppercorns and spices. So it's going to be really salami, like meaty tasting. But I would say if you're going to go with Project X, maybe try for like that cheese. Try something else that's like washed in wine and has a little bit more of a softer paste to it. Nice and melty.
All right, what's next? There's still a lot of, there's still four cheeses directly in front of me.
I'm looking at that real, gooey looking
Let's
one.
Let's do the gooey one.
Oh.
We're going to go for the wash rind. So this is a Jasper Hill Willoughby. Oh, God. This is one of my favorite wash rind cheeses.
It's falling apart.
Yeah, it is. Super oozy. Get a fork.
I'm a sucker for Jasper Hill.
Yeah.
Jasper Hill is great stuff.
So this is going to go really well with a very classic Belgian double.
Hooray!
Yeah. So this cheese... They wash the Willoughby in a couple of different things. They do special edition Willoughbys often. I believe this one is just washed in a very like easy like salt brine solution. So it's going to be salty, meaty, fudgy, bacony. So monks used to, still do, make washed rind cheeses. The romantic story behind it is that, you know, you have a monk who's trucking along making cheese, sees a little bit of mold, doesn't think that's clean, washes it with his like beer solution because he's sanitizing everything with that. comes back a couple of days, sees the mold again, washes it again, rinse and repeat, right? So then kind of the name of the game is back in the day they ate it anyway. And so they ate it anyway, loved it, kept making it that way, became a standard recipe. So this is very, it's like a classic, like, no-brainer pairing. You get, like, a Belgian, really fruity, fruit-forward Belgian double with a nice salty washed rind cheese.
Oh, yeah, this is good. Good thing we had one keg of this left.
It's true. This is
That's some super funk right there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's gonna smell like feet. That's Brevibacterium B. linens. It's the same bacteria that is on your feet.
Absolutely.
It is salty. It is bold. It is big. And this beer is a beer that I made with our old friend Jonathan Moxey. You might remember him from Car Talk with Jonathan Moxey on Ferment About episode, I don't remember what. he's starting his own brewery. He's a new brewer at a brewery called Rockwell. But at the time we made this beer together, he was still at Perennial Artisanal Ales in St. Louis. And this is a Belgian dark strong tribute to one of our favorite Belgian beers, Oerbier, which means the original beer, right? The original one?
Hey guys, we had a little bit of trouble with the audio here, so it got cut off when we were explaining which cheese we're trying now. So it's the Murray's Cavemaster Reserve Annalise. It's a raw cow's milk cheese made by Walter Rass in northern Switzerland's Appenzell Valley and named after his wife. It's sent to Murray's aged for 3 months, and then they age it for an additional 9 months in the Alpine Cave.
I want to ask about, so this is the kind of cheese that has those little crystals in it.
I love this question.
Tell me about the crystals, because I've had this explained to me multiple times and I can never remember, so.
Cool. So through the process of cheese ripening, if you leave a cheese to age, what happens is there are crystallization two different varieties. So there's a calcium lactate crystal that forms. There's also tyrosine. So tyrosine is an amino acid, which are building blocks of proteins. And so as protein chains are being broken down over time, you're leaving tyrosine behind, and it has nothing left to do but just sit there and crystallize. So people like to think this is a salt, which I think it can technically be characterized as a salt if it crystallizes. Is that the characterization
kind of
like salt?
The chemical, I don't know, I have to look it up again. Like the chemical definition.
Yeah.
We'd have to look it up, but.
I think we might have to look that one up, but there's been some debate about whether this is a salt or not. I know a very smart chemist told me that it is technically a salt, but some other people say it's not. However, tyrosine is not really widely understood in terms of cheesemaking for kind of obvious reasons that you can't get a microscope in cheese while it's aging. It kind of defeats the purpose of tyrosine breaking down if it has, you know, oxygen hitting it, if it has room to move because you're putting something in there. It's dark in there. You can't see what's going on. So tyrosine is still... We still have a lot to learn about it, but that's what it is. It's tyrosine crystals, and it's not necessarily flavorful. Actually, if you chew on them, it's kind of bitter.
But I feel like they're pretty small, though, in this.
Yeah,
Yeah.
In this particular cheese, they are small. You'll get larger chunks of them in, like, Parmesan, things that are aged for a lot longer, like 24, 36, 50-month-aged Parmesans are going to be, like, everywhere. But also, the calcium lactate that I talked about is typically found in Swiss cheeses. So if you ever see in the eyes, you see like those little white dots, that's what that is. And also when you talk about calcium lactate, you're talking about the white. So that white is not mold, it's leftover calcium on the top.
And you're pointing to the Willoughby.
I am pointing to the Willoughby, yeah. So since you can't see this, it's sticky and tacky and orange on the Willoughby, but on here there's spots of white and it looks like it's dried out salt. There could be a little bit of salt, but it's not. It's another crystallization. It's just a very small crystallization.
To me, it looks like just flour on like a pita.
Yeah, it looks like someone like left a little bit of flour behind on like a rising bread dough.
Yeah.
It's a good description. But yeah, Annalise is another weekend cheese. All of these cheeses are a weekend cheese for me.
This is even the Willoughby?
Even the Willoughby. If you pick this cheese up, I picked it up and it's still like funky on my fingers. I actually accidentally spilled a drop of this on a shirt one time, like as I was teaching a class, and I smelled like just Willoughby like the rest of the night, and I was like, "What is that foot smell?" And I was like, "Oh no, that's me."
You got any cheesemongers tips on how to get cheese smells out of clothing?
Wash.
So what are we pairing this cheese with?
So we're going to pair this cheese with a Saison. We're going to try something fun and new for me, just based off of my time spent eating beer and cheese for a living. I think this might be cool. I think this might be a cool pairing. Can you tell me about the beer a little bit so I can...
This beer is named Three Little Words, and it is dedicated to the zest and life of Sonny Rollins' performance on Three Little Words. And it is made with Saison Steen's Monster, a yeast kind of hybrid, genetic hybrid that Omega put together, kind of a cross between a Belgian yeast strain and a French yeast strain. So it has the dryness of a and acidity of a French Saison strain, while also maintaining a lot of fruity characters from the Belgian strain. And we added a bushel's worth of lemon zest at flame out, so we get a little zing from that that kind of dances with all of that. It's about 70% Pilsner, 30% oats and wheat, and it is 6.8% ABV.
Lovely. So I tried this. I think they work really well together. So what I want you guys to try with this is called the milkshake method. So I know you've probably been doing it already, and I know it sounds a little gross, but take the cheese and like get it really melty in your mouth and then drink the beer. And then I want to know what you think, because I love it.
Man, that is cranking. Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And I like that there's...
This might be my favorite pairing yet. So good. I'll do some Instagram stories that illustrate some of the cheeses that we're talking about.
Awesome.
So that people can know what they're looking for. And I'll leave those up as a highlight.
From where? From what
Instagram?
What Instagram?
Oh,
what?
For Men About It.
How do you spell that?
FUHMENTABOUDIT.
I'm following. Right? I'm gonna follow right
when
now.
When I told people what I was doing tonight, they tried to look it up and it was hard for them.
This cheese is so good.
Looks like we have a cheddar.
So this one, which is definitely cloth bound,
yes,
correct?
That is cloth bound. I'm gonna come over there and chunk it. So I'm gonna get
what is cloth bound?
Good question.
Wait, hang on.
So a cloth bound is any cheese that is wrapped in cheesecloth and or a food grade cheesecloth. So what we do is this is the only cheese that Murray's makes from start to finish. We typically age other people's cheeses. We developed this recipe with Cornell. This is super local. And what we do is we take it, and when the wheels are a little bit dehydrated and they're like blocks, they're actually cylinders, we take them and we wrap them in a food grade cheesecloth and coat them with lard, and then we age them in our caves for 12 months.
And what kind of, this is cow's milk?
It's cow's milk. It's delicious.
I like your slice style. Let's talk about this.
It's a very stabby, twisty method of slicing.
So this is called chunking. So actually,
I thought it was called scabby twisty, but
it's a stabby twisty. So what's fun about cheddar is that not only is it a style of cheese, it's also a verb. So you are cheddaring a cheese when you are making cheddar. So what that means is that when you take curds and you chop them up really finely, you salt them and then you press them together in blocks, and then you chop them up and you do it again and you press them on top of one another. So what that does is the salt on the surface of the curd, you're increasing the surface area that the salt is hitting, drains out the water a lot quicker through osmosis, and then you're leaving these curd structures behind that chunk and fall apart really beautifully, so you can kind of see where they fell into one another but never really combined, because the water activity was happening so quickly to dehydrate the cheese that the curds just kind of like fell and like Lego block together, and then now you can just pull them apart really easily. So that's why cheddars are super beautiful. Buy a pound of it, leave the cloth on, and just chunk it. It's gorgeous. It's a really gorgeous display, and then people can just pick it up with their hands. So here you go.
Yeah, that is one thing I did not know. I mean, I didn't know why
that's
people
the
chunked them.
One thing you learned tonight?
Well, no. I've learned a lot actually, but I've been into cheese. But this is one thing like that I've never.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew what cheddar was, but I never thought about the chunking of it. And I always wonder that because I've been to lots of parties and events where they chunk it.
They chunk. You got to chunk your cheese.
Yes.
Let's go big IPA on this one. It's a big, bold, cheesy flavor. What I love about this cheese is that it's like a baked potato with a little bit of chive and sour cream and bacon. And then you get like these beautiful, warm, like mustard green notes towards the end of the cloth, but also like fudge and like graham cracker and Ovaltine. There's just so much flavor going on in this that it needs something to balance it.
I like it.
This cheddar is incredible.
I know, right? Stocking Hall. So Stocking Hall is a hall in Cornell. Oh. I'm not allowed to say what it used to be called.
This beer is called Tale of the Comet. It's a big IPA that we dry hopped with Comet hops. Mm. About 8.5%. 8.8%. Kind of a throwback. Like, we did, like, it's a West Coast-ish IPA. Some crystal malt in there. Hit with some Cascade, some Zithos, some Centennial. Is it Centennial? Maybe not Centennial. It's funny. We make a lot of beer, and then, like, 6 weeks pass, and I don't remember what we put in.
Five
classic varieties.
And double dry hopped
with Comet.
What do you guys think?
The Comet is the showcase in this one. I've never really dealt with that beer before. I mean that hop before, but
you never dealt with the Comet hop until this beer,
right?
What made you want to try this hop?
Well, I heard good things. I heard it was had some characteristics of the classic sea hops.
Who told you?
The people, the they. I think they're a group in Oregon. I'm not sure.
That's really cool. I did not know of Comet hop until this discussion. So. This is a discussion.
So Chris and I, the whole IPA thing. So yes, IPAs are really hot right now. I think we've talked about this
right
before.
Now.
Yeah. For a while.
For a long time.
So hot right now.
Yes. But they continue. And of course, the ever popular hazy New England style IPA is especially popular because we have 15 draft lines in our tasting room. We're pretty lucky in that we can do a lot of styles of IPA. So we have 5 or 6 IPAs on right now. And they're all different styles.
Which, by the way, thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing that, because I'm really sick of drinking cloudy hot messes in a glass. It's a little old. I'm sorry. To every beer maker out there, please stop it.
Well, it's good. I think it's good. Like, you know, we have a New England style IPA on right now. Actually, two.
So Tale of the Comet is brilliantly clear with like a kind of a copper hue.
Old school.
Yeah.
But people like it, man.
It's a throwback.
It's always interesting to see what we make and then what sells in our tasting room. We do sell a small amount of beer outside the tasting room, but I'm always fascinated by the beers that I predict might not be as popular, like Lavender Saison, for instance. People loved it.
It was great.
I tried that when you did that, and you were like, oh, I'm going to do this for Mother's Day. And we talked about, like, well, lavender's a really harsh flavor if you use too much of it. And I think you only did, like, a day.
Less than 24-hour dry hop kind of thing.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing. And it turned out fantastic, by the way. I remember that beer. It's memorable, that beer.
It's cool, though, to see. I think it's awesome to be a beer drinker today, but also to be a brewer today, because especially when you have your own tasting room, in that you're able to make a lot of styles and able to, you know, you can go to to a beer store, even like around here, you can go to a lot of bodegas, Whole Foods, like, any kind of store that has a decent beer selection, and there are so many choices that we didn't have 10 years ago. I mean, you could drink
5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's cool.
I would say the same for cheese, to be honest with you. I'm seeing a lot more, like when I just go, like I'm out meetings, I'm out in the city all day, I go and I pop in a bodega, and I see like a really great cheese selection, and it gets me really excited because, you know, I work in wholesale, you know, I've got to make money. But at the same time, I'm excited because the more people, everyday people that are going and getting like wraps and salads and working a 9-to-5 see like Pyrenees Brebis and like really good cloth bound cheddars that you can just get quarter pound slices of or portions of, the more likely they are going to order that on a menu, thus increasing the world of cheese knowledge and cheese experience, which I'm really happy about.
And I think really people are just open to all kinds of flavors and taste and aromas right now, right? The American palate is wider than it's ever been.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree. That's awesome.
All right, we have
one
cheese left on the table.
So this particular cheese is Point Reyes Bay Blue. And for anyone in California or has been to California or has been to Point Reyes, they can tell you how gorgeous it is. This is also, I'd say, almost all female-owned company. I think there's one male left, and I think it's their dad. But two sisters run it, and they are actually trying to achieve, like, full level of green Within their company, they actually have their own like methane trap, which they use from the cows. They get like 40% of their power from the methane. They have sustainable practices. They half graze, then they half drive hay feed. They're just an incredible company. They send us green cheese that we also age in our caves, and then like in turn we buy their blue cheese. And this is just one of my favorite blue cheeses. I think it most closely represents like maybe the most American Stilton style ever. Maybe with a little bit more bluing. Do you guys like blue cheese?
Oh, yes.
Yes!
Good.
So I only had blue cheese for the first time last year because I've just been like, oh, it looks so funny. It's literally moldy cheese. But, like, it has an incredible flavor and funk, and I'm very excited. All although right. this cheese cuts way easier than I was expecting. You're using a plastic knife.
I am. It's very fudgy. It's very high in moisture. Moisture. Sorry, I just had to say that.
Blue cheese is often like that, though, right?
Some, you know what, it can be either crumbly and dry or pretty typically on the moister side. I am torturing everybody right now. So blue cheese becomes blue cheese by the piercing of the paste with aluminum needles. This does not inject blue mold into it. What it does is it creates airflow for the blue mold to grow and attach to. So you're actually inoculating the milk before it's coagulated with rennet with blue mold cultures, and then as the mold takes it with it into the curd, they then rub the outside with salt, dry salt typically, and then they leave it out to dry for a little bit, and then they'll pierce it with needles so that it increases airflow. So the more you pierce it, the heavier the bluing, the less you pierce it, the less blue it's gonna be. But this particular cheese is pretty high in moisture. It's only about like 3 months old, and it has this gorgeous natural rind on it, a lot of really beautiful, like almost Roquefort style mold structure. It's gonna look like parsley. But let's eat it. Let's try it.
And I know you mentioned trying this with the Belgian double before.
I'd love to see how it tastes.
So I just poured us that to start with.
Awesome, yeah, let's try it. Yeah, man. That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Because you're getting all, like, it's almost like a port in that essence.
What other beers do you pair blue cheese with?
That's a really good question, and it's kind of hard to say. It really depends on the blue cheese, and it really depends on the beer. I really try and not stick to anything too alcoholic. A lot of people want to go, like, I'm going to go Imperial Stout, and I want to get, like, the Goose Island Bourbon County, tastes like chocolate syrup, and you're, like, I get it. Like, that's a pairing I would go to if I didn't try that already. But I've tried a lot of different pairings of blue cheeses, and if you go too alcoholic, you're getting a lot of burn. And when you combine a really hefty, very like salty, a lot of flavor going on in your mouth right now, right? You're not going to eat like a whole wheel of this. You're going to have like little nibbles of this. This is a dessert cheese. You don't want to have anything that's going to overpower it too much, because all you're going to be left with is just like a mouthful of booze and no other flavor. So I would say a Belgian double, maybe a really gorgeous, like sweet chocolate porter, something that's going to be, like, I actually want to say, like, more English-style porters than American-style, because we tend to be typically heavy-handed on hops when it comes to porter. Like Sam Smith, the oatmeal stout, and the Sam Smith porter would be really good with this. But other than that, yes, try and stick to sweeter beers when it comes to blue cheese pairing, because you're just going to overpower the cheese with alcohol and hop, and it's not going to be good.
Wow. This is a really smooth and creamy blue. This is, might be one of my favorite blues. Like, Mary is a blue freak. Her hair is even blue right now. But I have not ever really, really always craved blue cheese. Like, I like it fine. I love it. I mean, I like it. I'm not as much of an enthusiast as she's crazy about it.
Like blue cheese and like French bread and with a little bit of honey and maybe some like dried fruit. I could just eat like a lot of it.
So for you, the blue cheese is more about the pairing aspects of it. Like if you pair it with something sweet and something that's going to complement it, that's when you can sit down and have a bunch of it.
Yeah, I love blue cheese, but it does, well, your palate, I think, you know why? Because your palate gets fatigued, right? And then it doesn't taste so beautiful anymore. It just tastes like one, you know, it becomes this gray zone. So if you kind of cleanse your palate with like a little bit of honey or, you know, something sweet, maybe a nice beer, some French bread. Then that kind of resets your palate, and you can enjoy more blue cheese.
I completely agree with you. The biggest question I get asked after I teach classes, people come up to me all the time and they ask me pretty much the three same questions. I'm having a party. I don't know how to pair. And I'm like, well, we just did a pairing and we talked about this. So what I like to say to people is listen, what would you want to eat? What would you want to drink with this? If you're looking at a menu and you see blue cheese in a salad, and you're like, oh, I'm really hungry, and I want this, it's endive salad with, some blue cheese, which is, pretty standard. What else is on that salad? There's, candied walnuts, typically. There's going to be sweeter elements, dried fruit. Take those pairing principles that you've already seen in all of your menus that you look at when you go out to eat and apply that to a cheese plate. Just deconstruct them and see what it is about that you like. Do you like the candied walnut aspect of it? Okay, maybe you'll like a really good marsala. Maybe something that has a little bit less sweetness, but a little more of, raisiny, walnutty, really gorgeous, sweet. I don't know another way to put it. When you're walking down the street and you have those roasted chestnuts, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. That's what I want to pair with blue cheese all the time. Something really sweet. What do you typically have with a brie? Is it fresh apples? Is that what you typically see at a restaurant? That's going to make a good pairing. Fresh with fresh, opposites attract, terroir, go regional. These are all really cool pairing principles and standard pairing principles that it shouldn't be too hard, but I think it overwhelms people. So, especially with blue cheese, play it safe more often than not. Go for the sweeter dried foods. Go for the sweeter beers. Not too alcoholic, but play it safe and your palate will thank you for it.
Awesome. This has been great fun and very delicious.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask one more thing. When we were talking earlier, you mentioned something about the difference between being someone who deals with cheese and brewers versus when you were in the brewing world.
Oh, yeah, I was talking about my relationship with brewers that I respected but was too nervous to talk to. When I was in the beer world, I think this happens in a lot of different careers and job, and if you're in finance, it might be hard to go up to a big guy in finance because mm-hmm. they think they want something from you, and I feel the obvious insecurity about that is, yes, I do want something from you. I want knowledge. I want a partnership. I want to learn from you. And having been in the beer background, I think I was a little more hesitant to message Chris and be hey, can I come by? What's up? But now that I have a big bag of cheese I can come into a place with, it's much easier for me to be hey, I have food, let's do some food and cheese pairing, food and cheese and beer and everything. Let's do events, let's have a good time together. And I think that the marriage of cheese and beer is, I think, incredibly classic. Don't tell this to anyone else. Sorry, I'm actually saying this on a podcast. But I love wine and cheese. I think it's a very classic pairing. But for me, beer is, hands down the better pairing for cheese than wine is. I think there's more intentional flavor in beer. I think there's more intentional flavor in cheese. And I think that they go very well together and the bubbles don't hurt. So, yeah, it's easier to walk into a bar with a bag of cheese or a tasting room with a bag of cheese and talk to a brewer and be like, here's some cheese, let's work together. In the past, it wasn't as easy because they thought I wanted something professionally from them. But I still do.
Awesome. Beer pairing here.
Oh, yeah. Do you have any events coming up that you want to promote or anything?
I mean, personally or professionally?
Either.
Professionally speaking, I teach classes pretty often. I'm actually teaching a class next Sunday. It's a cider and cheese pairing class. I'm actually teaching the cider part of it, which is something I'm getting into lately, is cider making. Other than that, just if you want to look up cheese events or any classes that are going on, mariescheese.com is great. There's an education tab. There's an events tab. It's just really easy to look the stuff up. We are always doing events, especially with brewers and local brewers, and I hope we get you in there someday to do maybe an Industry Monday or a
totally
class. Maybe we can do an Industry Monday.
Yes.
You want to do one soon?
Yes.
Cool, because I want to do a Halloween candy and cheese pairing with
Perfect.
Beer.
I'm doing
great.
Beer candy pairing this month, too.
Let's
cool.
do it.
So anyone in the industry that's listening to this right now, there is an Industry Monday. It's on October 22nd, Industry Monday. It's at Bleecker Shop at Murray's Cheese. I will be hosting it. I'll be running it. and hopefully I can get you in there.
I'm down.
Awesome. So yeah, we're going to do that together.
Yes!
Yay!
Woo!
At 2 p.m.
Awesome. Well, that's it for this week. We will be back next week with a show on pulque and some international fermented beverages. So we'll talk to you then.
Do you need cheese?
Ferment about it.
Ferment about it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Wall with no end on the banks of forgiveness. You clutch to your
burden. The waters of Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.